All right, welcome to the Strongpreneur Podcast. Today I'm excited to have the one and only Nick Slavik. He is the proprietor, a word that you don't hear very often, of Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration, and you're in Minnesota, right, Nick?
Minnesota.
Where at in Minnesota?
New Prague. It's about 45 minutes south of the Twin Cities.
Awesome. Well, man, I'm fired up to have you here because you got a pretty unique business going on. You're a pretty unique guy. First met you about 2-3 months ago in New Orleans at an industry event, and I was like, I got to have this guy on the show, and we finally pulled it off. So welcome to the show, man. How you doing today?
Good. Thanks for the opportunity, Tom.
No, my pleasure. So just to cut right to the chase, the number one reason that I brought you on, other than you just being cool, is you have a pretty unique business, very, very unique branding of your business. And so I want to get into that a little bit here today. But before we do, tell us a little bit about Nick and how you got into the trades and how long you've been doing it and stuff like that.
Born and raised in New Prague, in my hometown here. The old man started me painting somewhere between probably 11 and 13 years old, and every summer, every weekend, every holiday. After high school, went into the Army for 4 years, went to college after the Army, came back, planned on rejoining my family business, and me and the old man had a huge falling out. I went off on my own, and here we are.
Oh man! So you grew up in the trade. I actually grew up in the trade with a grandfather and an uncle in the painting trade, and I did everything in my power my whole life to get away from it, and I ended up in it. So,
well, up until 18, it was pure indentured servitude, and it was not something I enjoyed. And my family kept a ledger of everything I made for the however many years I worked for them. And then when it came time to pony up, it was not there. So I was truly, truly slave labor for many years for my own family business. So.
Well, it's been a blessing apparently, because you got a pretty good gig going on right now. And those of you that are listening to this, Nick is, head over to Nick Slavik, SLAVIK.com, correct?
That's right.
Okay. And head over there and check out his site, because there's this real old world craftsman feel to it. And I want to really highlight that here today, because, you know, the painting industry, like a lot of different trades, is extremely fragmented, competitive, and noisy. And so tell us a little bit about how you came about, you're calling yourself a proprietor, like right there, that, when's the last time anyone ever used that word? So, and you just have this, obviously I've seen your work. You do amazing work. You do, and this isn't meant to be like a technical, podcast here today, but you use some real traditional finishing methods and things like that, that I know a lot of modern applicators, don't bother to do. So how did you end up kind of going down this path and choosing to tell your story and brand yourself this way?
Painting with my old man, all we did was the old farms out in the country. In the 90s and stuff like that, a lot of these farmhouses hadn't been touched yet. And the original families and some of the original descendants still live there. So there was a lot of traditional old homes, barns, things like that. And I don't know why a kid would like antique furniture and old houses and history, but I was just drawn to it. I've loved it my whole life. I don't know why. It's my thing. And if you don't have the passion for something like that, you'll never research traditional oil varnish, because it's something that's supposed to be, phased out by now, but I love it. And, I constantly research new ways to make sure it's something that'll be viable, late into my career. So I love the stuff so much. I try to adapt it to the modern, progressive, sort of business-minded entrepreneur and kind of mend the two. But the love of the old mixed with, Facebook Live, for example, it's I love both, and I don't think they have to be separated. So
okay, so how long you been at this? 20 years or so?
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, maybe 22 years I've been painting, and 2007 is when I went off on my own.
All right, so you're about 9 years that you've had your own gig going.
Yeah.
What would the Nick of 9 years ago think of what the Nick of today has built?
Pretty impressed, I think. I was, you know, and I think you're a Midwest guy too. And, you know, I grew up in two families that were super passive aggressive, and everything was done by guilting other people into do it for you. So I never grew up with type A personalities. I never grew up with a strong, any figure like that. And, I was very timid and very quiet, very introverted. And, yeah, something happened between, you know, Army and college that, you know, when the time was to come on my own, the groundwork had been laid, and, it all kind of culminated in that. And I think I'd be pretty surprised on how businesslike and how forward and how outgoing, you know, I've become over the last almost 10 years of doing this.
Yeah. I mean, a lot can happen in 10 years, and you started your business, and a couple of years later, you know, the economy tanks. And what would you say have been some non-negotiable philosophies or outlooks that you've had in your business to be as successful as you are? And again, when you guys hop on his Facebook page and you check him out online and stuff, you know, Nick and his team are the real deal. And I've been in the painting industry a long time, dude, and I don't see anybody, very few people doing things the way you're doing them. So, and you don't have a 10-year run like you've had of success without really sticking in some of those non-negotiable, you know, outlooks, philosophies, whatever. What are some of those things that you kind of have carried through the years with you to build your business?
Well, my whole philosophy is remove all excuses. So when I went off on my own, I mean, imagine my father was still in business at the time, and he had 35 years under his belt. And when you say Slavic and when you say New Prague, it's synonymous with painting. So, I mean, you're going up against your own family name, your own family business. His company used his full name, just like mine, in the title. And I thought, you know what? I need to remove all excuses. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, I will devote to this business because I don't have another choice. I have worked my whole life. I have been groomed to be a painter. I had a business education, I had accounting education, I was a really good painter at the time, and if this didn't work out, I just had to sort of scrub the whole chalkboard clean and start over, and it just wasn't going to happen. So my whole philosophy has been remove all excuses. Probably the second biggest one, lead by example. There's not a guy on my crew who doubts that I can do the most technical work, the most challenging work, the highest work. Many times a summer, I still get out the 40-foot extension ladder and get up to the peak of the barn on the first day of the barn just to say, listen, when I ask you guys 2 days from now to do this, just know this is not impossible, you know,
yeah.
And things like that. So I fully lead by example, and not just in the way, you know, like the military was, well, hey, he shaves or he shows up on time. No, I actually do what my guys do. So when I've never had one of my guys come up to me. I was just thinking about this. Never had one of my guys come up to me and say, I can't do that. And I think that's part of it, that there is no excuse. They've seen it done. It what one man can do, another can do, you know?
That's good stuff. Yeah, obviously a lot of lessons from the military, man. And, you know, you're Army, I'm Marine Corps, and I know we both carry a lot of good stuff into our businesses that we picked up from that experience. Oh. So thanks for your service, bro.
Well, thank you too.
Yeah. So how, let me get this out of the way. I hear you're a hipster.
Oh, that was a top. Well, it's funny to say it's a play on words, but yeah, it was a topic of much debate in front of the whole PDCA expo. And I was taken aback by that, but no, actually, you know, if you talk to me for more than 5 minutes, all of it makes sense. I mean, I live in a 1918.
Well, hold on. Before you go, I'm hoping you're going to say something similar to what you said on the stage that day. Because you've got a beard, you got cool hair. all right, you're quote unquote this hip guy, and people will accuse you of being one of these hipster guys. And so what was your response to that in front of the crowd of, what, 800 people or whatever? What did you say?
Well, yes, you can, in one light, if you didn't know me, you could say it's a hipster. In another light, if you understood a guy who devotes every second of his time to learning about history, practicing history, restoring old homes, you would say, well, he either has a hipster haircut or he has a World War I veteran haircut.
Yeah, that's right.
Or he either, you know, he has a hipster beard or he has a beard like a guy in the 1890s.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, he likes the old homes, whatever, because that's what the young kids are doing. Or he has history with it and he knows what materials were done, what original finishes were on it, and he made all the woodwork in the house himself. You know, two very different lights. And I completely understand where Nigel was coming from, but boy, he had no idea who he was talking
to. Well, it could have been. I hope somebody has it on video, because you had a little edge to you. And I think you threw something in there about, you know, I can chop a freaking tree down with a pocket knife and I grow my own food. You know, I mean, it was like this.
I have a farm. I grow my own kale. I kill fish with a spear through the ice to feed my family. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I think on the outset you could very well, you know, read a book by its cover, but boy, it's, yeah, I devote my whole life to being authentic and finding real things and, mm-hmm. and practicing them. And yeah, I just, boy, that was, I actually took that a little personal. That's probably where the edge came
from. That's why I asked. I wanted to get you ticked again. So, so listen, how do you approach marketing your business? Like, how is this? I mean, you pull up 10 painter websites, yours jumps out, right? And you know, you just company identity point of view. I mean, you're very old school, traditional type methods. How have you approached marketing your business in a way to stand out? I know you had the thing in the same town with your dad and everything. But how did you come to settling kind of on this direction for your brand? Tell us a little bit about what you've learned with marketing like this.
Well, it's easy. I've always done what I love, and it turns out that sort of works. I love old stuff. I love history. I love tradition. So I kind of incorporated, you know, When I started making my first advertise, I still advertise pretty heavily in our local newspaper because happens that my market looks for that. So when I first started making my ads for the company, I took our old editions of our local newspaper from 1890 to 1910, and I just looked what the tradesmen's ads were like. And obviously, I modernized them. I put in images of myself. I made the business very personal, but I used the same fonts, the same wording, you know, like you mentioned, proprietor versus owner or partner, or I don't use LLC. It's just too modern and stuff. So I call myself a proprietor, and it's, you know, just because it's true. I mean, when you hear about a store on Main Street in 1890, the guy wasn't the owner; he was the proprietor. I mean, it's something more than just paying for something and then on a title page being the owner of it. You're the proprietor. You're actually taking care of it, overseeing it. And so I use that for inspiration, but also, obviously, you know, you got your website. I take I have three photographers that I tap around here to take traditional pictures. I style myself. I find the locations. I get the things. I show them examples of stuff from the 1890s to the 1910s. And I say, I want to sort of recreate the feel of this. They do it. We put it in the ads. And it seems to work.
So, yeah, tell us a bit. So that's pretty intentional. And there's a lot of effort behind that. And so how has that helped your business?
Well, and like you said, it just sets you apart. If you make something interesting to look at, and the Facebook feed is a perfect example, because people scroll down and you know, they probably see, you know, somewhere between 600 and 800 things on there. And only when things catch their eye do they stop. And it doesn't have to be something that they're passionate about. It doesn't have to be something they're looking at. It can be anything. And as long as you make the image interesting, somebody will stop. And the first intent, I mean, all of my marketing for the first 5 to 6 years was completely unintentional. It was just stuff I liked. I did it. I thought it looked cool. That's fine. But the first intentional thing I did in my ad was, because my father and I both have ads, and because it's a local newspaper, they think, hey, let's put the painters together. So our ads are always right next to each other. So I was paging through the paper, and nobody had a black ad. So I just started making all my ads with a black background and white writing. So when you turn the paper, you see one big black square and then the rest of the newspaper. And I thought, that's free. You know, if nothing else, you can't help but notice it. So, and it goes along with the sort of, you know, I try to market myself like a prestige company would, that would cater to the highest end of the market. But I don't do that. I just make my ads look as sophisticated and traditional and something like that. And it appeals to a certain crowd, but it appeals to everyone too, you know?
And I like the video on your site, the story you tell, and it really, I think, sets you apart as a guy who loves what he does.
Yeah.
And a passion comes out, and that's something, you know, I talk about from time to time some of the conversations I have in our Contractor Sales Academy, and you know, we have these conversations that keep popping up from time to time, and one of them recently was around the area of how passion helps you in the sales process. You know, if you're not somebody who really loves what he does, it comes across, you know, and so that's what I really liked about not just your site, but your video and the whole brand and things like that. You know, the whole, as you're talking about running ads in the newspaper, I'm thinking, Nick, this is 2016, man. Nobody reads a newspaper. But the point that I want to make for everybody listening is that you know who your audience is. You know who your ideal client is. And you know where their eyeballs are going.
A very important part about that is what I remind everybody is that, unlike a plumber or electrician and, you know, concrete guy, my market is 45 to 70 year old women. Mm-hmm. And I have a woman centric business. When I would say a full 80 to 85% of the calls I get are the wife, the mother, the daughter, the sister, whatever. They're the first one to make contact. And it just is what it is. And it turns out that, you know, it's trust plays a big role in that with anybody, but even more so in that. So, I mean, I constantly have to remind myself that, you know, I'm not a commercial electrical contractor or a mechanical contractor. I market myself to women, you know, and even some of my big, some of the people out there who actually proselytize for me are realtors. Most of the realtors that find me work are women. Most of the designers that find me work are women. It's just, you know, it's when you take a step back, if you just think, yeah, I'm a contractor, you know, we hang out at the lumber yard, we do it, you're completely missing your market. I'm a decorator, you know, that's what it is.
You know, if, you know, I grew up, my grandfather served, he was in the army, he hit the beaches, first wave at D-Day, you know, at wow. 17 years old. And he came out of the army. He called himself a decorator. And if you look at the companies that have been around a long time, a lot of them still have decorating in their title, in the name of the business. And you don't see that a lot anymore. And, you know, I think it used to be a more respected trade than it's become. I think it's, you know, no pun intended with the whole watering down paint, but I think it's been watered down. There's such an easy, there's such a low barrier to entry.
Oh God, tell me.
and so how do you, one of the things that I ran into in my painting business years ago was truly showing people the difference before they hire you, then you know what I'm saying? And I don't mean just like, hey, we have certifications and all that other BS, but how have you gone about really in the sales process, maybe differentiating yourself or finding ways to show that expertise before the person ever hires you or the other guy? Like what usually swings it in your favor?
you put me in front of anybody, and if they don't trust me at the end of it to at least give them accurate information or trust me with their house, something has gone horribly wrong. I am about as authentic a person as you can get. I could talk about painting, restoration, varnish, shellac for days on end, and I will talk until the homeowner kicks me out. If they have a conversation with me, they will understand that I've devoted my life to this, and I will devote the rest of my life to this. And I wake up in the morning and I immediately start doing this. I work at it all day, and at night, all I do is visit people and try to get that trust across to them that good luck finding somebody else that likes us more than me.
Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of contractors, they miss that trust element. They think that it's about price. They think, you know, certainly price plays a role in this whole thing, but I've had contractors work at my house and they show up, and I'll tell you, there's times where, you know, they'll show up and I'll be like, oh my God, I can't leave their site for a minute.
You know, Tom, I hate to do this. I got a crier upstairs. I got to run quick.
Go ahead.
30 seconds.
Yeah, you're good, man. Go ahead.
Hey, I'll be right back.
This break brought to you by Daddy Daycare.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing on the Strongpreneur podcast and you're getting value from it, head over to motorhard.com and sign up for our daily high intensity tips and kick your contracting business in the ass. Okay, in less than a minute or so a day, you will get some sort of tip to grow a stronger business or make your life a little bit better. So head over to motorhard.com, sign up for those high intensity tips. And, you know, depending where you are in the country, somewhere between 5 and 7 a.m., I think it is, it's going to pop into your inbox. You open it up, takes you about a minute or less to read, and you got something planted in your brain that's going to help you be a stronger contractor and drive your business forward and all that good stuff.
How do you define success in your business?
Three ways. You're the best. You supply the best coatings, best finishes. You have the happiest customers. And if you can call your life happy, you call it happy.
All right. So it sounds like, I mean, out of the three things, the first two were really others focused.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So it's, you know, I'm a successful business. You know, I run a successful business if I can look myself in the mirror about the type of product or service that I've delivered, you know, that I feel proud standing behind. And, you know, if your clients are fired up and feel cared for, and then in turn, you're happy.
That's it. I mean, all three are interconnected. I mean, this is truly my life's calling. And if I can't do, if I wasn't putting forth the best finishes, there's just, I couldn't call myself a proprietor or a decorator or an entrepreneur. I mean, if you're not going to do it the best way possible, you know, if you just try to skate by in life, I don't know if you can be truly happy.
Yeah. So I want to do a timeout and do a little section I call the gauntlet, where I'm going to ask probably four or five rapid fire questions. You're going to answer it, and we're going to get through the gauntlet in like a minute or two.
Awesome.
Tops. Okay. And then I'll kind of come back in, ask, and I got a few other things I want to talk to you about, and then we'll wrap this thing up. But all right. So you ready for the gauntlet?
You bet.
All right. And it would have been really cool if, like, when I say, anytime I say the word gauntlet, like Travis makes it sound really big or something. So gauntlet. All right. Here we go. Ready? Question one, your biggest strength as a leader?
Leading by example.
Your biggest leadership fail?
Failing to use the third 8 hours of a 24-hour day.
What do you do in that? No, actually, I can't ask any questions. This is a gauntlet. Never mind.
Come on, Tom, it's gauntlet time.
All right, man. All right, here you go. You have no work on the calendar. What do you do to get some money coming in right now?
Go through my database, start calling. Keep it short.
That's all right. I was taking a drink of water. You caught me. All right. you got to outsource one thing in your business starting tomorrow. What is it?
I'm doing this right now. SEO, online marketing.
Awesome. And top money-making advice for other business owners?
The third eight. The okay. third 8 hours in a day. What are you going
to
do with it?
All right, so talk to us about that. We're through the gauntlet, so I just said gauntlet again. Gauntlet. Okay, so it should be gone. So let's dig in a little deeper to that third eight. You brought it up a couple times. What do you mean by that?
Again, it's under the guise of removing all excuses. When I started my own business, you sleep for 8 hours, you work for 8 hours, and then you got 8 hours left in the day, and most people do nothing with it. I just decided to devote, at the start, all of those 8 hours to my business, and now maybe six of those hours, and then the remaining two with the family. So it's basically, you know, I assume that, you know, 8 hours of sleep is a given. You're going to devote 8 hours at least to your trade a day. And all the improvement is made for me in the third eight.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's really, again, being intentional with the time that we have, because, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. And
intentional, there could be no better word, because I am sick to death of hearing, especially contractors, I work 80 hours a week, I work 90 hours a week. Those are magically the guys who produce the least and have the least to show for it, you know. When you're going to do anything with that third 8 hours, that's precious, and you have to be super productive. Things have to be done. You have to have tangible results every single time you break into that third 8 hours. Otherwise, just toiling away for 80 hours a week is useless. You know, I probably work a lot less than some other entrepreneurs, but you know, I try to just make that time useful, you know, as useful as I can.
So what are some things you do in that third eight that kind of get you a lap ahead?
From 4 to 6 every morning, I work on my business. From 6 to 4, I labor with my crew. And from 4 to 8, give or take, I color consultations and estimates. So every second of that time, I don't take a half an hour lunch. I don't take breaks. I don't do any of that stuff. When I wake up within 7 minutes, I'm working on my business.
Yeah, so you have that Midwest monster work ethic.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's but, you know, cuz I know some people are listening to this that own contracting companies, and they'll say so let me be one of them for a minute.
Yeah.
And oh, Nick, you can't keep that pace up. You need to build a business that can run without you, and all those things that I know you've heard through the years. What's your take on that, or what do you say to that person who gives you crap?
What if you actually love what you do? Mm-hmm. What if? I mean, painting is one thing. We all know guys who are great craftsmen, but are horrible business people and horrible marketing and public relations and everything. What if you consider yourself just as strong as entrepreneur as you are a practitioner of finishes?
Yeah.
You know, what if accounting excites me as much as oil varnish? And what if you love all that stuff? I mean, I want to do it. I look forward to doing it every day. That's the problem. I look at that guy and I say, if your goal in life is to build this up so you don't have to do what you're doing, then it's not your life's calling.
Yeah,
that's fine. I never hold that against people. But my goal in life is to do this for the rest of my life, not to be rid of it and pass it on to other people. Mm-hmm. I love all. I would do SEO. I would do online marketing. I would do more of that stuff. But I finally hit the point where I know that my time is better spent on the nuts and bolts of the business, and that's sort of a accessory item to it that I need to do, but better time, you know, spent elsewhere. Yeah. So
that's good.
And
stuff.
And you know, and again, you know, with I got a young family and stuff too, and that, you know, talking about the third eight, that time is precious to me, and I could devote a little more of that to some more online stuff, but mm-hmm. not at the cost of the family.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, and it's I had a feeling that you would say something along the lines of, what if you love what you do? You know, then it's okay. It's because of the passion that you have. And so
the problem I'm sorry to interrupt you, Don.
No,
the problem I have, and it really annoys me when people talk about for some reason, if you devote your life to manual labor or the trades or being a craftsman, they do not consider you, you know, everybody says if you're a musician or you're a fine artist, if you paint pictures for 20 hours a day at the expense of your family and everybody else, ooh, he's an artist, he's mysterious. Nobody holds that against an artist and a musician for going crazy about everything they love. But when you're a tradesman, oh, you plebe. You're toiling away. You're just wasting your life away doing some low menial tasks. Why not? Why not? I mean, yeah, I am not close to being an artist, but why can't you take that artist mentality and put it towards contracting and entrepreneurship? You know, that peeves me because people put us in two separate things and they think we're wasting our time. I don't think I am.
Well, I've been fortunate to have worked with people, you know, obviously inside the contracting industry and a number outside in some very white collar industries as a coach and things like that over the years. And I will tell you that the happiness factor, in my opinion, is higher in the trades. You know, some of the red tape and BS, some of the white collar world has to deal with is ridiculous. And the contractors that get it, that are doing it right, that are treating it like a business, you know, they're the ones making a couple hundred grand in their pocket at the end of the year consistently, and they're building a real business that they can be proud of. And so I see no shame in that whatsoever.
No, and there's something biologically still in us that takes supreme satisfaction of doing something with your hands. And at the end of every day, you can physically see the fruits of your labor.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this. Your quality of work is obviously, I mean, it's way up there, man. And I know you have a team of guys that are, you know, they're employees of yours and stuff. How do you, because you know you've been around this industry a long time, and you know that if a contractor doesn't have a problem with leads, he's got a problem with people, you know. And so it's either leads or people, and finding people and keeping people and all that. How do you approach hiring? How do you know if somebody's right to bring on your team? How do you get them up to speed to meet your standards?
I find people who have never painted before, and I put them through my apprenticeship and journeyman program. I have a full 2-year apprenticeship program where the day I hire a guy, I make him a promise that I will treat him like he's going to work with me the rest of his life, no matter what. Even if he tells me I'm only working the summer, I'm just a college kid, whatever. Mm-hmm. I promise them I will treat you and I will put you on a track to be your own foreman, you know, within 2 years, and have your own apprentice. And I'm having my first couple guys go through the full apprenticeship program, and now we're starting the journeyman phase of it. But no, I'm always of the. I have had so much good luck with finding decent humans and then teaching them my way, mm-hmm. Of painting. The few problems I've had are, you know, the guy, the proverbial, I've been doing this 20 years, nobody's better, but I don't have a job right now and I don't roll over out of bed for more than, you know, less than $25 an hour. And those have been the worst guys.
Yeah.
Not only the worst painters, but they bring down the morale of the crew and they're just worthless.
So I was having a conversation with another contractor, a week ago or whatever, about his options. He's having people issues just like, you know, that, you know. And I said, dude, there's two different paths you can take here. You can find the guy with experience and he's going to bring some skill, but he's also going to bring some baggage.
Oh, yeah.
And there's going to be some pain associated with that, or you can embrace the pain of growing your own over the course of a few years, you know, the long game. Exactly. And that sounds like what you've really done. And I'm glad you answered that. I appreciate you bringing that up because I know it's a big issue with a lot of contractors and usually they wait till they have too much work and then they hire somebody and they settle for whoever they get, when you're basically running the marathon of training somebody. And you used a word, another old word is apprentice.
Yeah.
You know, that's, oh my God, that's, you know, that was like, you know what, Robin Hood times, you know,
it's funny. And it's, you know, for years and years, I've had employees and I've put them through the full apprenticeship program. I taught them about the molecular structure of oil varnish and latex paints. And I told them why certain things feel a certain way and did that. And finally, like 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, oh my God, I got an apprenticeship program. So instead of just saying I'm hiring help, I said I'm looking for spots to fill in my apprenticeship program. And it's just wording, but it's true wording. I was underselling myself. Yeah. You know.
and how are the results been with building a team?
It's good. The problem is I get such good guys that I'm basically a clearinghouse for, you know, Army and college. And I get a few of them back afterwards, but all my guys are destined for bigger things. And I'm working on keeping a few of them now. But I mean, they're such good guys that at some point I'm like, hey man, you should start some college, you know?
Right.
So, but no, that's, I try to remind them all the time that, you know, you may have plans, whatever, but yeah, I got a path for you, man. If you ever need it, it's here for you. And as far as you want to take it, it's there, you know?
That's good stuff, man. And so let me ask you, I got really, really two more questions here and then we'll part ways for now. But yeah. If you could wave a magic wand over the contracting industry, what would you change today?
I would say all you idiots need to gain the trust of your homeowners. You're going around, everybody's, you need to use your effort to gain the trust of homeowners. Everybody wants to sit behind a computer and find a magic Google word that will put them at the top of all the lists and everybody you ever wanted will call you and that, you know, employees will beat down your door to get to you, but none of that is true. You have to use your effort to gain the trust of homeowners, but you need to gain genuine trust. You can't have a sales sheet that you can read and magically you'll hypnotize the homeowner and they will trust you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you authentically need to gain their trust. And it takes, again, long game. It's taken me 34 years of basically living in this community, conversing with people, being part of the community, being in groups, doing whatever I can, being in hundreds of people's homes around here. You got to string together a lot of years to gain authentic trust like that. And I think guys are trying to figure out it's just marketing, it's just SEO. I just got to be part of the right trade group. I got to do this and that. None of that gets you any work. It's gaining the trust of the homeowner, 100%.
It's about the experience, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, my God, of all things, contractors, you are in somebody's house when they leave for work. I mean, mm-hmm. You need that trust of the homeowner, you know? So I don't think they value that enough, you know?
Yeah. I had a homeowner guy tell me once, I said, okay, we're standing there. I said, hey, let's pretend you hire me or my company. I said, what's the worst possible thing that could happen? he says that one of your laborers hits on my daughter.
Yeah.
Tell me more. and exactly that, like he had a teenage daughter and these dudes, you know, on the job site are like, you know, flirting with her and stuff. And so, you know, we go on somebody's property, their business, their home. It's, we got to respect them and their pets and their property and their money and their time and all these things. And that's what they're going to remember no matter how good the actual work is. You know, one of my business partners, he always says, you know, you can do a B+ job on the quality with an A cleanup and you nailed it, you know? And I would agree in most cases, that's it. If you were respectful to people, you communicate well. And as you said, all you idiots need to, you know, basically, you know, work harder on the trust game. You know, when you do those things, you'll have a stronger business. So I said I had two questions, but you actually answered it because I said, what would you tell a bunch of contractors right now about building a stronger business? So I don't know if you want to add to that, but that was my last question. So
It's one of the big ways to gain trust is not be the proverbial guy in the chinos and the polo shirt selling the job, and then the homeowner will never see you again. There's that goes against every business rubric, you know, where you have to, you know, segment out sales, and you got to have phone centers, and you got to have questionnaires and all this other stuff. And the chain of events, when somebody calls me, I have a local telephone number. So just by the prefix, everybody knows that I'm in their town. Mm-hmm. I answer the phone, and within 24 hours, I'm at their house usually.
Yeah.
From the time they call, or we set up a time and 10 minutes early every time. I'm clean, I'm in my good painter's clothes, and I'll talk with them as long as they want, answer as many questions as they want, give them as many options, do whatever they want, free color consultations, whatever I can do to prove to them that this is what I've devoted my life to. And none of that is easy. None of that is fun. And no contractor wants to hear that. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to hear SEO. They want to hear, here's a way to charge for bids. Here's a way to pre-screen people. And it may be good for other fields, but when you're a painter and you're dealing with, you know, $300 to $25,000 jobs, you got to turn a lot of that stuff, you know, into actually money-making projects. And you gotta have a lot of projects coming through. So,
and
that stuff builds on itself, the long game. You know, the more you do of that, the less you'll have to, you know, work later on in your career, you know. And
you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the person that doesn't know you. And on one side, I could see them going, oh my gosh, that's like you know, you're talking the newspaper, you're talking, I answer the telephone, you know, you're very hands-on in a lot of ways. And what I want people to understand is that you're also an extremely forward-thinking guy. So it's kind of like you're this really cool paradox, because you have an Instagram account that you're very active on. You're doing Facebook Live videos. You know, you were talking about SEO and some things like that a minute ago. And so you're very cutting edge and forward thinking in some ways. But what I don't want to be missed here, that this is just what I'm catching from this, is that you found a great way to keep the human touch in the process.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, in thinking about a lot of this stuff, I find myself thinking that SEO, Facebook Live, paid ads, AdWords, things like that. I was very surprised at the PDCA Expo. I was actually fairly naive about it. I've only been a member for a short while, and I had a complete misconception about it. But I was under the assumption that there was going to be a whole bunch of people like me there who labor for 10 hours a day, do their own books, make their own ads, mm-hmm. you know, design lettering for their own trucks, you know, things like that. And when I showed up, I was very surprised to see that it was a lot of, you know, business owners. And, you know, again, I never cast aspersions on any of that. I'm sure they cast some on me for still being a laborer, but I took a lot of value from that. But at the same time, I think when we sat in on all those talks, like the one you gave and the one I gave and some other people, everybody's talking about SEO, cost per lead, things like that. I think they're missing. I'm under the assumption that if you're to that point, you are the best painter that anybody can find. You gain the trust of all your people, and you have the happiest customers.
Right.
But I think people are jumping ahead of that I am the best painter part. I mean, I am part of the painting and decorating contractors of America. The whole decorating thing sort of gets left out.
Yeah.
And nowhere at that expo did I hear anybody talking about my customers are the happiest. I am the best. Nobody, find another person to do a better job than me. And that I am the most fulfilled with this business. There was a lot of talk of revenue, you know, the typical things you can judge a business against. But I think when the only reason I'm doing SEO and online marketing now is because everything else is a given. My product quality is a given. My trust in the community is a given. Now I can improve. And I think people skip that part.
You know, I heard God, I wish I could remember the name of the book. If I remember it, I'll put it in the show notes. There was an old quote that said, really good marketing and advertising will just make a poor product or service fail faster. Yeah, and so, right. And so their whole point was you dial in the product first, you dial in the service first before you go to the masses with it, basically. And I kind of have a rule of thumb. I personally believe, okay, if I just take 100 leads that come into a business and you know, I believe that if you're doing well with the experience and the, you know, the quality and the product and all that, that you're truly going to have, out of those 100 leads, 60 to 70 of them are going to be past clients and referrals.
Yeah.
Like I think all this marketing voodoo stuff that we always talk about is really to fill in that last, you know, 30, 35, 25% somewhere in there of those leads. What are your thoughts on that?
My I have never directly sold anything. I've never sent out a direct mailing saying, hire me for these services, you know, whatever else. I have always been under the idea that I'm going to put everything out there. I'm going to make it all good to look at. So when the time comes, it's easy to find me, and it's appealing to sort of browse through my stuff, and it's something is interesting there. So I've never thought of my marketing as selling anything. When I make a new ad for the newspaper, or when I post something on Facebook Live or whatever, I'm never thinking how many people are going to call me because of this. I'm playing the long game. I am not leaving this town, and I will be a painter here for the rest of my life. So I'm basically building up. I am an expert in my field for what I do. Mm-hmm. I want everybody else to know that I have devoted my life to this. Good luck finding somebody else who loves this more and can do a better job.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to portray to the people. So when the time comes for painting, even if they don't know my services, what I want the conversation to be like, honey, we should get the house painted. Isn't there some Slavic guy? They type in Slavic and I've laid the groundwork. It's there. It's easy to find. It's all there for them. I don't want to knock on people's doors. I don't want to beat them down. I don't want my paid ads showing up in their Facebook feed. It's there, you know?
Well, that's good stuff, man. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time away from your third eight to have a conversation with me tonight. I know you have little ones at home and stuff. And how can people reach out to you if they want to get in touch and pick your brain or learn more about you and what you do?
Facebook, Nick Slavic. Instagram, Slavic Nick. And www.nickslavic.com. And if can I just pull your ear for 30 seconds, Tom?
Yeah, man.
What advice? I mean, you know probably more about me than a lot of other people do in this sort of form. What advice do you have for me? You know, coming from somebody who's run a very large company and is sort of doing that again on a smaller stage. And what advice can you give me?
Oh, wow. I don't think anyone's ever turned the tables on me on this show. wow. I would, the first thing that came to my mind, I'll go with that, was always have your own personal clear definition of what success means to you. You know, no matter how long you're in the game, you know, I think you got to have those non-negotiables that, you know, I have a friend and partner in who's in the pond industry, you know, Steve Schinholzer, who's been on the show before, and he's, yeah. You know, his three things are, you know, he wants to, success to him is he can make good money, he can change lives, and he can have a lot of fun. And so, though, you know, so he's not comparing himself to other people. And I'm a competitive guy, and sometimes I fall into that, you know, oh, I have to be at this level, and I have to be at this level thinking.
Yeah.
When, so I would just say, stay what you're doing. You know who you are, and stay true to that. You know, no matter where this thing goes, you know, and have that clear definition of success, and then And then do lots of direct mail. No, I'm just kidding.
What's fun, the closest thing to direct mail I do is I send a thank you postcard to every single person on my database at the end of every year, just thanking them for their past business. So that's about as close as direct mail as I get.
And it's that little stuff, man. But, you know, I know you, but I don't know your business intimately to have any game-changing advice other than one of the biggest things that I see every contractor deal with at some point is comparisons. And we just have to make sure that we are really comfortable in our own definition of success, which it sounds like you are, man. So I'm happy for you. I look forward to watching, you know, you continue to grow your business and serve your community. And I, head over to the Facebook page and weigh in. I'm sure anyone that wants to touch base with Nick, you can do it via Facebook or some of the other ways that he shared, which I'll put in the show notes. And
I'm sorry, Tom. Every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Central, I do a Ask a Painter live on Facebook from my deck in my backyard.
There you go. Bam.
Send me questions. I do some demos and this and that. Just a couple minutes Saturday morning. You can weigh in live with your questions and we can do that. Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. So we'll, you know, head over there and check out how Nick does that and how he engages with his Facebook community as well. And which again establishes him as an expert in the industry. So Nick, thanks for hanging with me tonight, man. And get some, try to get your 8 hours sleep tonight and hit it hard at 4 a.m.
We'll see. That crier is getting up again here soon. So no, thanks for the opportunity, Tom. I appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Have a great night.
Travis, bring in the guitars.